Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Talked to the president this morning and recommended an increase from $100,000 to $250,000 FDIC insured on deposits. I also strongly recommended that the exchange stability fund that the Treasury has available $250 billion to shore up these institutions. Also, the Treasury has at its disposal about $1 trillion that they could begin without congressional authority buying up some of these terrible mortgages and help stabilize the situation.
The House of Representatives voted on a financial rescue plan that had been negotiated by congressional leaders of both parties.
I turned Bush off. Him I can't even listen to. But McCain I have to listen to. Welcome to the Savage Nation. My headline is, oh no, McCain says bypass the people, just spend $1 trillion on Wall Street bail. And I say, John, what is wrong with you? Are you that idiotic, John, that just when you're fighting neck to neck with the other side, and just when you got some of the conservatives to go along with you, now again you say drop dead to the people? You say the Treasury can spend $1 trillion by bypassing the people and Congress? Oh no, McCain, I'm sorry. You keep this up, my friend. There's a Buick dealership for you in Mongolia as sure as I'm standing here. You'll go back to obscurity. You'll be in Siberia when this is over. McCain, what is wrong with you? Can't you ever get it right? Now, you may say we can't afford to have Obama win. You know, at this point, I'm not so sure there's a bit of a difference between McCain and Obama on so many issues, it doesn't matter to me. I've said that to you. Now, I know what an oligarchy is, and you should know by now what an oligarchy is. Think of it this way. If I were a cartoonist, as I understand Federico Fellini was before he became a great film director, I've never been a cartoonist, nor do I intend to become a film director. I only want to be a talk show host. But if I were a cartoonist, the cartoon I would draw today would have a large, invisible man behind the puppet stage, and the face of this man would be obscured. And he'd have two large hands going into puppets. And on one side, there'd be McCain, and on the other hand, there'd be an Obama puppet, and they'd be pretending to be fighting with each other. But what you have to understand is that by the laws of physics and the laws of politics, there is no difference between the two candidates on so many levels that they may as well be one with two faces. In other words, they're just fronts. They're figureheads, much like the Queen of England is a figurehead. The heads of these two parties are figureheads. So, you know, you pays your money, you takes your choice. It is the naked oligarchy at work here. Welcome to the Savage Nation. If you remember yesterday, the oligarchy predicted Armageddon. Armageddon didn't come. Today, the Dow went up nearly 500 points. The markets went up without the bailout. But today, Bush and Obama and Paulson and McCain still want the bailout. McCain says they'll do it whether you want it or not. You see, the bailout is not designed to help the economy. The bailout is designed to help the oligarchy. The agents of the oligarchy were enraged as they heard the voice of the people, mainly from talk radio and the internet, say they would not give Wall Street another penny. Republican hacks decried populism. Some jerk whose mother's an agent in New York, who's been faking it as a conservative, said that he hates populism of any kind. Well, needless to tell you, he'll be nowhere very shortly. Once the Bushies are gone, this hack will go back to waiting tables in Soho. And on the other side, Democratic leftists rage that the people would not go along with their plan for socializing the economy. And the oligarch in chief, George W. Bush, came out today and said, it matters little what a path the bill takes to become law. What matters is that we get a law. And John McCain, the great conservative, said today, quote, the Treasury has at its disposal about $1 trillion that they could begin without congressional authority to buy up some of these terrible mortgages and help stabilize the situation. So McCain says, screw the people. We'll bail out Wall Street anyway, without the approval of Congress, without the approval of the people. This is the oligarchy in its most naked, insidious form. And let me tell you this. I want you to take this as a take-home message. I said to you that the bailout is unnecessary. I said to you that the bailout is aimed at preserving primarily two Wall Street investment banks. Goldman Sachs, from whence comes the creature of the Black Lagoon, Hank Paulson, and his buddies at Morgan's, his buddies at the other investment bank that is still standing after busting out, in my opinion, several of the other banks, after destroying them, and like vultures picking up the pieces, including valuable real estate such as the billion-dollar building that Bear Stearns owned. They want to bail their friends out without any down payment, without any collateral. And we said, no, we gave them the middle finger. And enough congressmen are up for election, Democrat and Republican alike, that they actually did what the people said they should do. They were representatives. But McCain, who pretends to be a populist and some, what does he call himself? What's the word he's been using? Maverick. He's a maverick like, I can't use the flowery words that I learned as a youth at the knee of my dad. He's a maverick like, let us say, the foul gas that passes from a man after a colonoscopy is a maverick. I'm sorry, John. You know Maverick. You're a stooge of the oligarchy, just like Obama is. So on that note, we'll play some Rock and Roll Tuesday music, because I'm not going to get too worked up about these oligarchs. Please play any popular rock and roll song, because I'm a populist. No, kill that. I don't want to hear it. No. No, something a little better, like spiritual. Then I'm going to talk spiritual a little later on the Sabbath. That's better. All right, a little better.
I fell in love with you, heart and soul, the way a fool would do, madly.
Yeah, bad knees.
Because you held me tight.
He has bad knees because you held me tight? What was this, like a pre-senior song? You have bad... The guy got bad knees because she held him tight? Good God. I turn it off already. I'm really not... I'm trying to be humorous to myself. It doesn't work. I'm really miserable and angry. Why should I be humorous? Why should I be happy? Why should I be... What is this? What's there to be happy about? We have an oligarchy saying to the people, drop dead, and there's Schmuck McCain... Schmuck McCain saying we have $1 trillion the Treasury should start spending right away. Screw the people. Screw Congress. What a president you'll make, John. Hey, John, let me tell you something. If you keep this up, you're not going to be president. You will wind up back where you were a year ago on the ash heap of political history. What are you, crazy? What are you, out of your stupid mind?
I was going to talk about nice things today. A lot of my listeners are not listening because they're Jewish and they're in services. By the way, why is Congress closed on Rosh Hashanah? I have to do this in a delicate manner because I've been asking this question. I feel uncomfortable that the House of Representatives is off for a Jewish holiday. And I'll tell you why I feel uncomfortable about it. I think it stimulates anti-Semitism, which is already present in a good portion of the nation. You know, I read the internet. I see the internet. I see the anti-Semites. I see the statements that Zionists run America. I've seen all the Zog stuff. And I find it offensive. I find it racist. I find it Nazi-like. But I got to tell you something. This shows a lack of sensitivity and brains on the part of Congress. Why should a minority of congressmen dictate that all of Congress close down for a Jewish holiday when, in fact, the Jews who are in Congress are not even religious? This is what I'm getting at. This is false Judaism. Do you understand what I said to you? It's a double slap in the face. And I'm going to talk about it. I am going to talk about it because I'm afraid this is going to stimulate anti-Semitism, closing Congress down at a time like this. And by the way, Congress is not closed down. The House of Lords, I mean the Senate, is functioning. I guess how come they're still functioning? Well, Barbara Box is in jail. All right, fine. Yeah. And like my poodle is. But it's an interesting question. I don't know what other religious holidays do they close for? Mother's Day? That's not a religious holiday. Get drunk on St. Patty's Day? That's not a religious holiday, except for taverns on the Upper West Side, which don't even exist anymore. I don't get it. I mean, why close down for religious holidays? It makes a particular time like that. Actually, it's a good idea. I think they should stay off for the rest of the year. The market will keep rising the longer these thieves are away. Here you have Christopher Dodd, the man who stood in the way of regulation, having again, I can't use the right word, the flowery words. He is Christopher Dodd, one of the most corrupt congressmen. He's a senator? What is he? I don't even know what he is. Every time he talks, I think of the Brotherhood from WPRO for some reason. I don't know why. I go to the Showtime series. Maybe it's my bias. But here's Christopher Dodd, who for years stood in the way of any regulation of Wall Street, coming out yesterday saying, we need regulation on Wall Street.
He's Bernie Frank, who practices with a number one clerk everyone. He's Bernie Frank, the man who deregulated Fannie Mae and made the government give money to the minority economic firm. He's Bernie Frank, the intellectual genius, and saying that we need more regulation.
Bonnie, again, I don't have the flowery language. I can't use the flowery language I like to use for you. I wish I was in O'Shea's Tavern right now. Bonnie, I tell you what I really think of you, Bonnie. But until then, we're sending you a free package of number 12 corks so you can practice your articulation. Why dogs? There's three other topics I'm going to get to today. Now that I've gotten warmed up. One, why dogs are revered by religious Jews. This you don't know. I started thinking about it. Why do religious Muslims hate dogs? The Somalis, for example, the throwbacks who say, we are not going to drive you in a taxi if you have a dog, even if it's a seeing eye dog. This is amazing to me. I mean, the Muslims think that animals are dirty. While I ask religious Jews, why do you folks not find dogs offensive? And they explained to me that biblically there's a story which explains that not only are dogs liked by religious Jews, but they're revered by religious Jews for a reason that none of you know except me. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, I threw out a lot of red meat for you out there today, so, you know, where do you want me to go? Why dogs are revered by religious Jews, McCain being a dunce, saying that we should that Treasury has the money, $1 trillion, bypass Congress and the people. Schmuck, we have to vote for you, you idiot. Some of us were going to vote for you till today. And he goes on Fox and Friends to say this, no less. What a moron. Me. I think a guy is a clear and present danger to himself, let alone the country. God. Well, I'm going to vote. I don't know if I'm going to vote for anyone. But I'm voting against gay marriage, period. To me, it's a travesty. That's all I can say to you, and that's what I'm going to vote for. I'll vote for dog catcher before I vote for president. You know, I told you, think of a cartoon with a figure behind the stage, behind the screen, a shadowy figure with two hands. In one hand is a puppet called McCain. The other hand is a puppet called Obama, and they're arguing with each other. But they're not. You know, they're the shadows on the wall, man. What do you want me to do? Say I'm happy with the selection? I had two ugly incidents today. I don't know. Man's hatred for man in Obama's garden is another story I was going to talk about. One occurred in Macy's. I went to Macy's by bicycle to buy a shirt. I didn't even need it. Who needs clothes? But things are so cheap, you have to buy them. I wonder, how can they mark a shirt down to the price of $9? I don't understand it. So I buy it to hang it in the closet with the other shirts I buy on sale that I never wear. I wound up wearing like the same three shirts for a whole like a decade. You wash them and they feel better. But I buy them anyway. You know, once in a while you got a nice shirt, but I hang in the and two pair of pants. I'm charging this and that and that. The salesman was a very nice African guy. Actually, he was very nice. And I'm almost finished with the transaction, and some tall old wasp comes over and tries to push me out of the way. I was here first, he says. I said, what the hell are you talking about? I said, I'm finishing. No, I want my transaction finished right now. Did you ever have this happen? Well, we really started yelling at each other. And I said some choice, vulgar things to that old cracker. I even called him an old cracker. I said, old cracker, you get out of my way. You're going to really wind up with something in your face. I mean, I never saw anything like it. Some people are crazy out of nowhere. No, there's a topper. And the restaurant will remain anonymous pending a letter I get from the owner. If I don't get the letter, I'll explain the name of the restaurant. So I figured, all right, this is the way some people are. So that was Macy's part one. And I'm a peaceful guy. I stay out of people's way. I don't talk when I'm on my own. You know, ask people. Next, I bicycle over to a certain area where there's some restaurants, put the bike down, and I see a big chocolate Labrador retriever tangled up in his leash. His leg was tangled. And he looked very uncomfortable. I didn't want to reach down because I don't know the dog, and I know well enough that dogs could bite you if they're strange dogs, no matter how innocent they look. So I went into one restaurant, and I asked, is there a lab? And the girl in there said, no, we saw the owner go into the other restaurant. I go in the other restaurant. I say to the manager, maybe you could find out if there's an owner of a brown lab. He's tangling his leash outside. He was very nice to me, and he started to politely go around table to table. But there's another manager, a real son of a gun, who's always been hostile to me the years I've gone in that restaurant, whose name will be withheld temporarily. And he looks really hostile that I asked him to go table to table. So he goes, and about 2 minutes, 3 minutes later, he comes back to me and he says, that dog, there's no trouble with that dog. I said, what are you talking about? He's tangling his leash. And he says to me, no, he isn't. The owner just went out and got him, as if to make me wrong. Well, I got to tell you something. My blood boiled. I have not encountered anyone as rude since high school, perhaps even grade school. That's what you call a cheap shot. And if this guy's a dog hater, why is he in the restaurant business? And I want to know why the restaurant owner would permit such a pig as this pig in that restaurant, which remain unnamed, for another day. Unless I get a letter of apology, I'm going to tell you the name of the restaurant, because I'll tell you that if conservatives are not welcome in that restaurant, you ought to know it, because maybe they'll do something to your food like Jesse Jackson used to do. You know what I'm saying? How do I know what this guy does to your food behind the scenes there, if he's so hateful to me for no reason other than he doesn't like my politics? Get it? If not, you better get it. Because I don't like rudeness, and I don't like pigs in restaurants who are dog haters who serve people food. So there are two ugly incidents today. Man's hatred for man in Obama's garden. But there's a third story coming.
Savage.
You know, many of you listening to this show are not religious. You are irreligious or atheist, but you're law-abiding, and you believe in the law, and you believe in natural law. What you don't know is that most of our law is derived from biblical edict. For example, on my website, there's an article, Father Kills Sex Offender Who Broke Into Home. A convicted sex offender died during a struggle with a father who found the naked man in or near his 17-year-old daughter's bedroom, right? So now we go to Exodus 22, where it says, if a thief be found breaking in and be smitten so that he dieth, there shall be no guiltiness for him. You hear this? That's interesting. That's very interesting. If a man cause a field or vineyard to be eaten, and shall let his beast loose, and it feed in another man's field, of the best of his own field and of the best of his own vineyard, shall he make restitution. In other words, it was common law. It made sense. If your animals were released, even by accident, into another man's pasture, and you ate the man's, and your animal ate the other man's grain or whatever, or the grass, then you have to take the best of your own field, the best of your own vineyard to make restitution. So it's common sense in many cases. Now you get to other things that, of course, in San Francisco they wouldn't agree with. Whoever lieth with a beast, it says, shall surely be put to death. Now if that law was law in San Francisco, half of the administration would be put to San Quentin, I'm sure, if a man lieth with a beast. And the rest of it we'll stay away from for right now. Certainly I'm not a biblical absolutist, but you should know that many of our laws derive from the Bible. That's where most of morality derives from, whatever's left of it. But I was going to tell you a story since it's a slow day. We all know about the bailout and where I stand on it. What's the point of beating each other up with it? We know the oligarchs are going to try to pull it off on us. You know what? Take a deep breath. We won. We gave the middle finger to the oligarchy. We stopped them cold in their tracks.
You know what? Take credit for the fact that we in talk radio did it. Just be very clear about it. Don't start giving credit to everybody else. We did it, just like we stopped the Dubai ports deal. Now, if McCain is saying go around the people on this and spend the trillion anyway, Hank, tell me what McCain's going to do if, God forbid, he becomes president with regard to the 30 million illegal aliens. You know what? Let's legalize them all. I don't care. I'm a nice guy. Can't we all get along? Rodney King there. Rodney McKing all of a sudden. So I don't even want to talk about it. Instead, I want to tell you why Jews, Orthodox Jews, are why they revere dogs. It's an interesting story. Don't you want to learn things instead of just talking the same garbage you could hear anywhere? We did our job already. We stopped the bailout for now. And guess what? The market surged. And I love the schmucks like Chris Matthews going to, well, the market tanked yesterday, went down $1 trillion in value.
Hey, but it went up 500 today. We'll give you the details.
Oh, you schmuck strawhead pets you. No wonder you got slapped in the face by General Electric for making such a putz of yourself. You're on a network that specializes in lesbian, gay, and whatever. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, MSLBGT. Microsoft Lesbian, Bisexual, Gay, and Transvestite. MSLBGT is the new network. If it's not LBGT, tell me what that network is. What are you doing on there, Chris? I mean, a guy's got to make a buck, but you ought to take some brown soap when you get off there and take a nice bath, and then you could sit in the chairs over there. Pat Buchanan, moo. They're the only ones who would have him. So here's why. I still don't know why Muslims hate dogs. I still don't get it. They say they're dirty. How dirty can they be if you use them as a seeing eye dog? And I love the Somali Muslims in Minnesota. They were let in on asylum. Most of the cab drivers are Somali. They won't drive people around, even with a seeing eye dog. But they're so pure, those people. Yeah, they're so pure. Yeah, real pure. So I figure if the Orthodox Muslims don't like dogs, they hate them, what about Orthodox Jews? So I asked. And turns out Orthodox Jews like dogs. And here's the reason why, according to the story I was told. In the ancient days, boys and girls, the Jewish people were enslaved in Egypt. Whoa, I'm talking a long time ago, way before your grandfather's day. The Jews were slaves in Egypt, and they had hard work. They had to put that straw and mud together and make those bricks, and they had to build those pyramids, whatever. The Egyptians snapped the whip and cracked the whip on them. The Egyptians were the original crackers, in case you don't know it. But so the Jews were the slaves of Egypt, and they were there for a very long period of time. Now, the Egyptians didn't want to guard the Jews day and night, so they had guard dogs, certain kind of biblical dog was used as a guard dog. Lots of dogs guarded. I think it was 600,000 Jews were enslaved, according to the biblical Bible. And they had a lot of dogs watching the 600,000 Jews. So now, over time, the Jews were planning to escape in the Exodus, to escape from Egypt. You remember that story, the biblical story? But in order to do so, they had to lay plans for the escape. They didn't just stand up and run out. They're watched by dogs. They're watched by guard dogs. So over time, the Jewish slaves learned to communicate with the dogs. They were kind to them. They fed the meager rations they were given to the dogs. They gave the dogs. And they learned to communicate with dogs. I don't have to tell you, if you have animals, you can communicate with them somewhat silently, even through kindness, through touch, through innuendo. So the Jews learned to communicate with the dogs. And over time, they said to them, look, Fido, here's what's going to happen. Certain day, we're going to give you the signal, and we're going to, like, walk out of here. Now, don't get no snapping, no biting. We've been nice to you now. We're giving you half our grain. Just, you know, dummy up, lay down, and let us out. All right? That's what happened. So because they talked to the dog, communicated with the dogs let them leave Egypt, according to the way I was told this story. And to this day, an Orthodox Jewish person who has a dog is told to feed the dog before they feed themselves at a dinner table. It's an amazing story. That's why I don't want to talk about the bailout. You heard that already from everybody in the world. They're all geniuses on the bailout. You heard it already. Good. Listen to your favorite talk show host. That's all. I'm going in another direction right now. So I give you story two. One, two ugly incidents today. Man's hatred for man in Obama's garden. You heard about that nasty guy in the restaurant that will remain unnamed who shouldn't serve a dog. He himself is lower than a dog for behaving that way for a man who was trying to, you know, release a dog who was tied up in a chain. Who would? I don't want that guy around my food. I don't think I'm ever going to go in there again, number one.
Number two, why dogs are revered by religious Jews. Now, three, I think I'll save for the next hour. Remember I told you how science and God are not mutually exclusive? Many of you were unable or have been unable all your life to accept God because you were trained in science and you think, well, wait a minute. Carbon dating tells us certain things, like the strata of the earth. You learn that in you know, Earth Science 101. That's if you even went to 101. You can see the stratum of the earth, or you learn about carbon dating, and you understand that things can be dated to a fairly high degree of accuracy and find out dinosaurs, X, million, Pleistocene, Miocene, Eocene, all aboard. And, of course, then you got the cracker on the other side, the uneducated moron who says, no, evolution's evil. It's the word of the evil man. What they don't understand is that you can believe in evolution or science and God. They're not mutually exclusive. Unfortunately, the religious teachers today are ignoramuses, by and large, and they tell so many people lies that God created the whole world, 5,000 years ago, including the dinosaurs, even though they're carbon dated to millions of years ago. Well, no, that's trickery from the evil sciences. Come on, stop it already. Grow up. So I showed you on this show that you can believe in evolution and God, because I do. And you say, well, how? Because when it says God created the earth and the world in 7 days, 7 days to you is one thing. Isn't 7 days different to a dog? Like 7 minutes to a dog is like 7 hours to you. You go out of the house, they think you were gone. They go crazy. I said, I just have 7 minutes. I took the garbage out. What are you jumping for, Teddy? Okay, so to you, 7 days is 7 days. To God, 7 days could be 70 million years or 700 million years, right? That's one explanation that gives you the capacity to understand that you can believe in science and God. They're not mutually exclusive, but there's another one. I told that story last night to a crowd. I was invited to a Jewish dinner in the Hilton Hotel, a beautiful dinner. And it was largely filled with young Israelis. And I was very impressed with their intelligence. Remember, they're listening to me in my little talk, and I'm speaking in English, and they're listening to me and translating it into Hebrew, their native language. And yet they understood every innuendo. More so than John McCain can, apparently. And so I tell this story about how science and God are not mutually exclusive. And afterwards, a young lady comes up to me with her, I guess, paramour. And she says to me, thank you for that story. They didn't know who I was. They never heard of the show because they're from another country. I guess they were visiting. And she said, that really helps me now understand how I can believe in God and science. But she said, I must tell you that I had a professor in Israel who explained how you can believe in science and God through another set of understandings. I said, what's that? She said, listen carefully what he said. She said, my professor said that God created and destroyed the earth many times. I said, oh, my God. Wow, that's brilliant. That was like a satori, as the Japanese say, an instant insight. What do you mean God created the earth? See what she said to me? In other words, if you find that the dinosaur's bones can be carbon dated to 20, 30, 40, 50, 700 million years ago, whatever it may be, depending upon the Eocene that it may be, the Pleistocene, Miocene, Eocene, whatever that particular animal was that lived at that time, it could be that the earth was created all at once at that time by God with Adam and Eve, okay? And then God didn't like the way Adam and Eve went, so bingo, the whole earth got knocked, destroyed. Then he did this many times, till now we're in this incarnation, where 5,000 years ago, in fact, he did create the world again. You see what I'm saying? For us. Now you come to what we're doing to this earth right now, how we're behaving to each other. The degeneracy on this planet is exemplified by San Francisco, where people walk around naked and beat each other in cages with whips in public. The police and the city transvestites do nothing. God's really mad. He's so mad that we're on the verge of losing this earth again. Is how I see it. It really scared me when she said that to me because I said, instantly understood she was right. That explains it all for me. You get what I just said to you, God and science? And I think that that's as important as the bailout because we're living in the end of times. When you see an oligarchy like this, where they're saying to us, although we caused the crash with our criminality, we want you to give us $1 trillion. Then today we wake up and John McCain, who posed yesterday as a populist, he says, well, listen to the – he says the Treasury could just start buying up those mortgages right now without congressional authority to begin stabilizing the situation. And I said, oh, my God, if ever I was going to vote for this man, unless this idiot does a pop wheelie and goes 180, it is over for me and him. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Market jumps, though bailout fails. The naked oligarchy, top left, michaelsavage.com. Oh, no, McCain says bypass the people. Just spend $1 trillion on Wall Street bailout. Oh, God, John. On the top right of my website, the soundbite we put up from yesterday, the spiritual side of the downturn, forget the golden idols. It's a wonderful monologue I gave, and it's up there. And underneath that, that is psychological nudity, Savage Radio Stories. Order now to guarantee for the holidays. I'm not going to push it too hard until about maybe the end of the month, and I'll tell you why. Here's what's going on, just so you know. See, I'm very upfront with you. I told you that I printed a certain number. I've sold over half of what I printed in the first printing. And my guesstimate is I'll sell the other half as soon as the holiday orders start coming in, and that'll be it. It'll be over. So I figure it'll sell itself. I'm not going to push it too hard. Thank all of you who've ordered the book because you're guaranteed to get it for the holidays. And the rest of you have to order, I would say, over the next few weeks if you want to get one or more copies of the Savage Autobiography. And I'll repeat again, this book, this edition, this first edition, first printing, will not be sold in bookstores ever, ever. I mean, maybe a used copy will, but I'm not selling it in the bookstores. And I might put out a second edition, second printing next year that might go to bookstores. I don't want to mislead you, but it will not be a first edition, first printing. And if it means anything to you, grab it, period, end of story. Because I think it's worth having a book of beautiful, warm stories about life is just life, period. So we can talk about other stuff, whatever you like. The bailout, I think, is pretty clear who it's for. Because since there's been no bailout, the market leapt. You know, like, just get out of our way. I'm glad you guys are closed for Rosh Hashanah. Good. Stay off for the rest of the year. We could do well. Maybe the market will recover itself once the troika of comrades are gone. Comrade Paulson, Comrade Cox, and Comrade Bernanke. And I should add Comrade Bush and Comrade McCain, who were saying, yesterday, Armageddon. Armageddon, unless there's a bailout. Well, guess what? There was no Armageddon. The market didn't drop again. It went up. Savage poll, who caused the fiscal mess? The site was jammed yesterday. You couldn't even get on it. I made it simple, Republicans or Democrats. I figured I'd play that game. And needless to say, most of you think it's Democrats. You know that it was Barney Frank and Nancy Pelosi who did it. That's all. They did it. They're the ones who did it. They couldn't even get their own conservative Democrats because the conservative Democrats are first-term Dems in the heartland who are up for re-election, and they know that their listeners don't want the bailout. 86 to 13% Dems caused it. 15,000, 18,000, what? Oh, 13,000 say Dems caused it, 2,000 say Repubes caused it. That's to be expected because I'm a conservative, so the website would indicate that's the listenership that I have. But that's okay. That's how it's running. I've seen things run, by the way, the other way, like on marijuana. I had to run the other way. A lot of you are dope heads, potheads, even though you're conservatives. I don't understand that one. Whenever I run anything on marijuana, it's like, oh, that's the cutoff point. Don't touch my dope. Get your hands off my dope, man, when I do whatever you want. Touch my boot, my, you know, whatever. I know you can smoke that garbage. I did when I was young and stupid. There's a reason it's called dope. Dope makes you stupid. Scramble to revise bailout bill. McCain and Obama are scrambling to revise bailout bill. See what I went? Go back to the puppets again. Puppets are being told, you know, woof, 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 woof. There. What Palin? Oh, yeah, Thursday night. Palin is going to debate against the nice guy, real nice guy. You'll see how nice he is. It's hard to see. If he brings up certain things like Russian experience with Russia, that could come up again. She sees it from Aleutian. That would be a bad one. He could bring that up, but she'll know how to answer it this time, but. She could get him, I mean, easily. She can get, who's she? I can't ever remember. Oh, Biden, over Biden. The Ubermeister over Biden. He's always been nasty. Those teeth of his. hair plugs. No, nothing. I'm saying everyone a certain age, but nasty, man. Just evil kind of old school smokestack. You just get a chill up your spine when you see Biden. You see bags of cash in toilets going to AIDS, you know, like in the movie version. I didn't say him. I'm sure he's above board. But every time I've seen him, I get the chilling feeling like it's a Orson Welles could have written the right movie, you know, like in black and white, and a certain black and white too, not a general. It was all different varieties of black and white movies. The Touch of Evil kind. Great movie. Hey, do you have that soundbite from The Touch of Evil?
Watch my fortune. You've been reading the cards, haven't you?
I've been doing the accounts.
Come on, read my future for me.
You haven't got any.
Oh.
What do you mean?
Your future is all used up. Why don't you go home?
Oh, my God. You know, that scene, I got chills with the hair stood up in my arms. I swear to you, head to arm. Every hair stood up. The genius of that particular interchange. Your future is all used up. Marlena Dietrich, I think, is playing the fortune teller. Yeah, and Orson Welles. And you hear how his voice changes? He goes from gruff. He switches over. What do you mean? I couldn't do it. I'm not an actor at all. I don't know how guys can shift like that. There is a genius to being an actor. You know, it just doesn't mean they know anything else. But he was a great director and a great actor. Doesn't mean he knew anything about anything else. So I know nothing about acting. I mean, a guy could go from that voice of confidence to, well, what do you mean? I can't do it. I tried acting once in the high school, in Jamaica High School. I remember I had to hold up a teacup and make believe I was drinking coffee at a scene. I played like a father or a kid in the play in a school. And you had to hold up a cup and there was nothing in it. I thought I was like lying to the audience. I can't do it. At least put coffee in it. They said, no, just hold up the cup during that scene and make believe you're drinking. I couldn't do it. I'm just not Hollywood type. They can do it. They can fake anything like knowledge of politics, knowledge of morality.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Business deal. That is not the case. The Arabs have taken billions of dollars out of this country, and now they must put it back. It is ebb and flow, tidal gravity. It is ecological balance. You are an old man who thinks in terms of nations and peoples. There are no nations. There are no peoples. There are no Russians. There are no Arabs. There are no third worlds. There is no West. There is only one holistic system of systems. One vast and immane, interwoven, interacting, multivariate, multinational dominion of dollars. Petrodollars, electrodollars, multidollars, Reichmarks, rands, rubles, pounds, and shekels. It is the international system of currency which determines the totality of life on this planet. That is the natural order of things today. That is the atomic and subatomic and galactic structure of things today. And you have meddled with the primal forces of nature.
And welcome. Oh, all right. Well, anyway, that's a clip from the movie Network. from many years ago, in which businessman Arthur Jensen is lecturing a TV commentator, Howard Beale, on economics. It could just as well be today, and it could be not Arthur Jensen, but let's say the owner of one of the networks lecturing one of the sock puppets who might stand up to the buyout, or the bailout, rather, and say, how dare you? How dare you stand in the way of the bailout? Let me and yell at him like that. So as you say, you know, art imitates life, life imitates art, whatever you want to say. Here's they're all saying the same thing. I mean, if you think Obama's different than McCain, how come both of them are for the bailout in exactly the form it's in? To me, it makes no sense. And as I say, today is evidence that I was right. In other words, there was no bailout. We were told Armageddon would occur. And instead, the market started to correct itself. It went up 500 points. To me, it's a crony system trying to protect cronies on Wall Street. And I have to repeat over and over again, I'm the only one doing it. Now it's resonating a little bit outside of the Savage Nation, which is that there seems to be the appearance of impropriety that the former chairman of Goldman Sachs is just so intrigued by the health of Goldman Sachs that he would insist upon a bailout which will help Goldman Sachs et al. And just for that reason alone, I mean, Paulson has to be stepped out of the way and put somebody in who's not at all connected to either of the investment banks that might benefit from this. Isn't that common sense? It's cool. There's a bias. There's a built-in bias. That's why I played this for you. That's all. We're not accusing Mr. Hank Paulson of any impropriety. We're just suggesting that there might be a suggestion, a hint of impropriety amongst less educated people, amongst people, let's say, who are not on the inside. They may look at it and say, wait a minute. Put two and two together, you come up with four, not 14. And other things we're talking about, the naked oligarchy. It's the good thing up there on the website. I'm already tired. I want to go home now. I did it now. I'm burned out already. I'm tired a lot since that procedure. I don't know. Why? 1-800-449. John McCain talking about the failed bailout and what it can do to help. No, again, a genius. A genius like this. Like Frankenstein. Just when he got the people already on his side. Every time he gets us on his side, bing, the gun goes off in the foot again. Every time McCain wins over a portion of America, the rockets go off his plane again. He sinks the almost sinks the carrier. It's over and over again. I'm sorry to bring up such a painful memory. Every time he gets people on his side, bingo, he presses the whatever, and the rockets shoot out. And then, what do you mean Treasury has as well as $1 trillion? And he could do it without congressional authority. How dare you, John? Estupido, man. Estupido. How could you say that? You're playing the role of Teddy Roosevelt, Mr. Populist, and here you're playing, you know, all of a sudden Mr. Oligarch Stooge. The Stooge from Oligarchville. That's why puppets of the oligarchy, that's all. Let's look at the top campaign contribution. Citigroup gave almost $300,000 to McCain and $450,000 to the other man. J.P. Morgan gave $500,000 to Obama and about $200,000 to McCain. Goldman Sachs, Hank Paulson's old company, gave $250,000 to McCain and $750,000 to Obama. Ooh, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs. These are the very companies that McCain and Obama want to give $1 trillion to. They don't answer to the people. They answer only to the politicians don't answer to the people. They answer to the powerful. And as I said to you, on the media stage, Obama and McCain appear to be separate actors. But if you pull back the curtain, you will find that they are merely puppets on different hands of the same powerful oligarchy. Their movements are contrived to make you believe that there's an actual choice between candidates with different positions. But unfortunately, the receipts tell a different story. Now let's hear clip 11, a new ad from the RNC entitled Worse. Let's hear that one.
Wall Street squanders our money, and Washington is forced to bail them out with, you guessed it, our money. Can it get any worse? Under Barack Obama's plan, the government would spend $1 trillion more, even after the bailout. $1 trillion. Who pays? You do. New taxes, new spending, new debt. Barack Obama's plan, it'll make the problem worse. The Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Very nice. Very nice. Unconvincing. Why? Because they say under Obama he'll spend $1 trillion. Well, right. It could have been about McCain. He just said we should spend it without congressional approval. See, the only difference in economic strategy between Democrats and Republicans, so far as I can tell, is the Democrats are tax and spend party, and the Republicans are a borrow and spend party. Other than that, there's no difference. Neither of them say they're going to stop spending. The Dems say they'll spend by taxing. The Republicans say, oh, you can't tax. We can borrow. We'll borrow more from China. That's all. So you could see why already I'm tuning out already. Turn on, tune in, tune out. That's all. I'd rather talk about eternal things. I'd rather talk about Joshua, Leviticus. You shall not make yourselves detestable by beast. Whatever. Leviticus, Exodus. I get more interested in that than I am in McCain, these temporal passes, you know, these actors. You know what I'm saying? And they shall take them captive, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. See? What goes around comes around. That's how it works. And they shall take them captive, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. It goes around and around. You're on top now. Tomorrow you'll be down. See? Whatever. I mean, that doesn't mean tomorrow, but what goes up must come down to a people terrible from their beginning onward, a nation that is sturdy and treadeth down, whose land the rivers divide. I don't want to do the Bible in that sense because you say I'm just demoralizing here. But to me, the Bible's like reading a newspaper from 5,000 years ago. And unfortunately, the newspaper's kind of repeating itself. Some of the language is better than what you get out of the J schools today. Gog, son of man, set thy face toward Gog of the land of Magog. I like that. That has a certain power to it. Gog, Magog, Cush, Gomer, Targum. See, the newspapers have forgotten that they are derived from the Bible. Unfortunately, most liberals, I see them here in the land of Obama, they still sit with the failed newspaper. They actually run their hand down the column. They're like, to them, they're reading Ezekiel. Whatever the moron wrote in the newspaper, these schmucks sit there, and the word of Obama saith, thou shalt voteth for me, and I shall saveth the world and parteth the sea. And all of the evil shall depart from the land of Marin. And upon this land of Marin, the land of the good Obama, shall come beneficence and happiness. They read it like they're reading the Bible with the finger down the page. They don't understand that the newspaper is a derivative of the Bible in that sense. But the problem is the J school graduates don't have the flowery language. They don't write about Gog, Magog, Cush, Gomer. Gog shall come out against the land of Israel, saith the Lord. That's good stuff. That my fury, look at this language. My fury shall arise up in my nostrils. That's what you want to read today. Fire and brimstone. I love how the journalists try to pretend that they're objective. Every story is loaded with a bias. And I will send the fire on Magog and on them that they dwell safely in the isles. Whoa. And them that dwell safely in the isles. That could be Britain. That's no good. That's already nuclear. I don't want to get into the prophecy. I hope it doesn't happen soon because I'm tired. I'm not ready for it. Apocalypse. You got to be ready for an apocalypse. You know what I mean? You have to be in shape. You have to have jog, take your vitamins for the apocalypse. I'm a little down lately. I don't know what it is, the season or allergies. If God's going to bring the apocalypse, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, I hope he can wait like 7 weeks. I'll be in shape. I'll be in shape for it. I mean, right now I'm not ready. Still dragging a little bit, you know, since the colon. I don't want to. I'm not ready. Not in shape. I'm not ready to, like, pack a bag and climb over the mountain, like with a grandfather on my back, the way many. I heard stories that like, people walked out of the old country with their grandmother on their back, like through Manchuria, and they got to Shanghai. I don't know how they did that. How did they do that? How did these people escape Russia for 3,000 miles by foot? They didn't even use pack animals. And it was always like a stalker guy, like built like an ox. He carried the grandfather over the Urals. Snow, blizzards, and they got to Shanghai. They started a new life. Then they took a ship to 8 years later to San Francisco. The next thing you know, they own all the high rises from nothing. You talk about, you know, like brains and guts. Then people hate them for succeeding because the other guy was here like 150 years. You know what he amounted to, Jack? He did nothing with himself. That's all. Smoked, got drunk, and he won this way. The guy who came. How could he do that? He must have robbed me. You know, you were a lazy, stupid bum. You did nothing. What do you want from the guy who just got here, whether he be Indian or whatever? He's smarter than you, and he works harder. He's willing to work. You're not. That's all. End of story. Bum. Cymbal shot. Who am I talking to out there? At least with a live audience, you know who's out there. I need to do more live. I like looking at eyes. You could tell right away if they like what you're saying. You change it. You shade. As you're talking, it's like a nightclub performance. See, if you talk to an audience of 100, which is the perfect number, 75 to 100, you're projecting, you're gesticulating, and you're looking. You're watching action. If you get the rustling already, you've got to change tempo rapidly to grab them back in. But if you're on radio, you don't know who's there. I'm in a room here with the dog. What do I know if you're even listening to me? The lights are on, I know that. But I have no idea if there's an audience out there. Allegedly, it's the third largest radio show in America, but you wouldn't know it by the coverage in the media. My name is never mentioned, so they pull up like number 10. A libertarian. That's very hot today, libertarianism. Oh, yeah, I'm a libertarian. Whatever happened to the libertarians? What happened? Everyone realized that they were liberals who were originally Unitarians. I'll be right back. Savage. I'm live. So here we are. I'm in a strange, one of my states of mind. I go in and out of these things. I could be super rational, whatever. I want to read you one last piece from the Bible, only because it works. And many of you listening to this show are lapsed Christians or a lapsed Jew. But it's like something weighing on your mind, like, well, what... So I dip in. So when I read from the Bible, what you do is you get a vicarious biblical thrill because you yourself don't even have one in your house. You have internet porno. You don't need the Bible. And you think that that's going to help you in the end, So listen to what Micah wrote because he was into this. He was into the bailout 5,000 years ago. So Micah in the Bible, the Old Testament, writes, "For the rich men thereof are full of violence." Whoa. Okay. "For the rich men thereof are full of violence. And the inhabitants thereof have spoken lies, and their tongue is deceitful," and blah, blah, blah. Now, this I like. "Thou shalt eat, but not be satisfied." That's you. That's the average American today, right? Every yet is for antacid or this. "Thou shalt eat, but not be satisfied, and thy sickness shall be in thine inward parts." Then enters the gastroenterologist who tells you you need a colonoscopy. And he actually induces illness in you by sticking a pipe in your... "And thou shalt conceive, but shalt not bring forth," sterility. Bingo. "And whomsoever thou bringest forth will I give up the sword. Thou shalt sow, but shalt not reap. Thou shalt tread the olives, but shalt not anoint thee with oil. And the vintage, but shalt not drink the wine." Why? Because he was mad. And then he gets up to 7 in the mic and he says, "Woe is me, for I am as the last of the summer fruits." Now, we're not referring to the sicko parade in San Francisco. "I am as of the last of the summer fruits, as the grape gleanings of the vintage. There is no cluster to eat, nor first ripe fig which my soul desireth. The godly man is perished out of the earth, and the upright among men is no more. They all lie in wait for blood." That's all of us. We're all guilty. You hear that? All of us. "The godly man is perished out of the earth, and the upright among men is no more." We're all no good. "They all lie in wait for blood. They hunt every man his brother with a net. Their hands are upon that which is evil to do, and they do it diligently. The prince asketh, and the judge is ready for a reward. And the great man, he uttereth the evil desire of his soul. Thus they weave it together. The best of them is as a briar. The most upright is worse than a thorn hedge." Do I have to go on? "Trust ye not in a friend. Put not your confidence in a familiar friend. Keep the doors of thy mouth from her that lieth in thy bosom. For the son dishonoreth the father. The daughter rises up against her mother. The daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies are the men of his own house." I didn't write it. Micah did. So today they drug him. Today they put him on a drug. Oh, he's depressed. So, "No, I'm not depressed, man. That's what's going on." "No, get into the psychiatric ward." "No, I'm telling you, this is what's going on. Get in the ward. We're going to inject you. You'll feel better, Micah." No. "I'm telling you, it's no good. You're all no darn good. Get in here. You'll feel better." No. And they inject him. And next thing, there's the end of the Bible. That's what the atheist liberal wants to do. Wipe out all semblance of morality. So when I criticize the psychopaths in the streets of San Francisco who whip each other in public naked this weekend in cages with their genopathic homosexual mafia in Media Matters attacks me. They say that the parade was family friendly. And you believe a word that those perverted gangsters at Media Matters write? See, what do you want to talk about? The bailout? President warns of consequences if Congress fails to pass the bill. Well, Mr. President, they didn't pass the bill, and the market went up 500 points. What does that tell you? You better get a new speechwriter.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. You know what I'm going to do now is I'm going to read all the headlines on michaelsavage.com because a lot of time is spent collecting stories from various websites, ripping them off and putting them up on my site. It's interesting, the internet. Everyone uses everyone else, but okay, but then you link and it goes to them. They get credit anyways, they figure. But it's a Rorschach of my world, what's on my website. So the top left, market jumps, though bailout fails, the naked oligarchy. That's my headline. Read it. Right side, the spiritual side of the downturn, forget the golden idols. We have like a cartoon of a golden idol with the ancients worshiping it. Next. Oh, no, McCain says, bypass the people, just spend $1 trillion on Wall Street bail. Oh. And by the way, that's the correct word. It's bail for Wall Street, not the bailout. That's a new phrase you should be spreading around the internet. Give them bail, not a bailout. It has a certain ring to it. Why they picked $700 billion, we just wanted to choose a really large number. In other words, they don't even know why $700 billion. Next. And you can call in on these. Feel free to call amongst yourselves. Three Somali pirates dead after shootout during Muslim feast. The pirates, you know what's going on there? It's a heck of a story. We're actually working with the Russians. And the U.S. Navy is finally doing what their schedule is supposed to do instead of having goodwill tours to China and letting Chinese spies on with cameras. They're finally doing something. They haven't exactly fired a shot yet, but they're getting ready. They loaded the gun. They're looking in the camera. They're looking in the – and they're getting ready. They got it targeted. If they have to, they will. But yes, yet a bullet hasn't been fired yet from a ship. We spend trillions of dollars. The Navy doesn't fire a bullet, nothing. But they're ready any minute. 1 second, they're on a hair trigger. They're going to fire any second. They got it in the radar. It's radar guided. It can go around corners, under the water, around the water, sink the ship. But they haven't fired yet a 22 at the Somali pirates. Obama's organizer pals pushed for bad mortgages. Many vulnerable lawmakers said no to bailout. Duh. What do you mean vulnerable? They were listening to the people. On the right side, we have a man in a mask. The devil runs San Francisco. I mean, that's self-evident that it's from the devil. Down sun sets on New York Sun. The New York Sun, a newspaper launched 6 years ago, billing itself as an alternative to the Times, published its last edition today. Savage poll who caused the fiscal mess. Next on the right side of michaelsavage.com, jet setting greens. Says, it's clear from a study, Brad Pitt and Al Gore aren't the only greens with a fondness for jet travel. No, of course not. They're just hypocrites. Father kills sex offender who broke into home. Grandmother 77 smuggled 1.8 mil of coke. London Daily Mail. Debunking global warming. A melting Arctic. Happy news for mankind. Saudi woman driver hurt after defying ban. Wonderful advanced country, that's Saudi Arabia. Wonderful advanced nation spreading their poison around the earth with their madrasas and from Virginia to San Francisco, teaching women they should be in a veil and not drive a car. Heck of a system. Savage book sales surpass Pelosi project. Here's another one about religion. 177 worshippers crushed to death in stampeded Hindu temple. We won't even go there. Then why are they always stampeding over there? I don't get that. We don't stampede here in America. We're supposed to be here like, you know, uncivilized to the European and the rest of the world. We're supposed to care what the world thinks of us. There's been no stampedes in a church or a synagogue that I know of. Why do they always stampede? Next article, 35 years for Muslim who plotted attack on Christmas shoppers. Nice fella. Truly took the religion of peace to a new level. A one-time admirer of Osama bin Laden who plotted a hand grenade attack at a mall jam with Christmas shoppers, etc. Nice fella, good-looking face on him. 35 years, oh, Chicago. A one-time admirer of Osama bin Laden plotted a hand grenade attack at a mall jam, tried to trade two stereo speakers for the weapons, was sentenced to 35 years in prison Tuesday. Real genius. Derek Sharif of Rockford. He said, I'm not an extremist, said Sharif. No, yeah. U.S. District Judge David Corr said he hoped Sharif has changed, but that a long sentence still was warranted. to discourage others who might plan similar attacks. He could have given Sharif life in prison. Almost every defendant who appears in this court says, I have now seen the light, and if you just give me another chance, it won't happen again. The judge said to Sharif, the Muslim. Some of these are people with criminal records as long as my arm. Sure, the libs tell him what to say. Sharif was arrested December 06 in a Rockford parking lot after he offered an undercover FBI agent two stereo speakers for four hand grenades and a 9mm pistol. This guy is a real psycho. You know, I don't believe in the insanity plea, but in this case, they should have used it. What a deal. What a deal. Offered an undercover FBI agent two stereo speakers for four hand grenades and a 9mm pistol? That's Teddy barking. You heard somebody outside the studio. Don't worry, Teddy. I have a 9mm Glock that's loaded here. Agents said Sharif's plan was to detonate the grenades in garbage cans in the Big Cherryville Mall on December 22nd. The blasts were expected to spray the mall with lethal shrapnel. Can you explain to me how someone could study the Quran and come up with this? How is that possible? How could a man convert to Islam, read the Quran, and want to spray shrapnel into a mall? How is that possible? Young said Sharif now opposes violent jihad and has adopted more positive Muslim beliefs. He said Sharif has emerged as the imam of the Metropolitan Correctional Center. Oh, God. A guy who wants to spray a Christmas mall with shrapnel is now the imam in a prison. Isn't America great? Wow, what a country. Nice looking fella, too, if you get a nice looking picture of him on my website. Kind of man you would entrust to, you know, bring him to dinner, bring him home to dinner for Christmas, for an interfaith dinner. What else do we have? Savage's psychological nudity bears more than politics. And on the bottom of the website, demand for cranberries nearly outstripping supply. Why did I put it up there? I'm interested in beverages and health items. I mean, I used to eat cranberries around. They always had like a product that sold around a holiday, and then they try to like, they got a PR agency and ad agency. Look, we got a big sale around Thanksgiving with those cranberries. See if we can push it through the rest of the year. But they don't like it. There's no taste to it. I don't care what you have to do. Tell them it's good for Purim, whatever. Tell them to use it for Easter, Ramadan. I don't care what. Tell them it's in the Bible. Tell the idiots anything. I want you to sell them cranberries. So now they did such a good job. They got people using them. They don't have enough supply now. Then there was a cranberry scare in the 60s. Remember you ate it? Every year at Thanksgiving, you eat cranberry sauce because apparently the invaders who ripped off the land from the Indians, they ate cranberries, which the Indians taught them about. The antioxidant value. You always get like a jellied cranberry that's horrid, disgusting, full of sugar. You can just puke from it. It's like Jim Jones could have created that jellied cranberry. Ugh. In my house, we used to buy the cranberries when the kids were young. We did the whole thing, not with the pilgrim outfits. We didn't go that far. We weren't liberals in that sense, where Dad put on a pointy hat and Mom wore like a gingham dress. We didn't play pilgrim with the kids, no. But we bought actual cranberries, boiled them, made them. I don't know how they did. What a story to make a cranberry. They don't remember it, though. It's often not. If you have young kids, remember, no matter what you do for them, they're not going to remember it. Let me give you a little hint. Live a little more for yourself. You'll be happier once they leave. Because they won't remember a good thing you did anyway. All they remember is the bad. No, you want to hear the truth? All you young parents who spoil your children, you're wasting your time. Once they become adults and leave, they'll remember nothing. Very nothing. Maybe once you took them to a museum, they'll remember a double-headed snake. Or something. Very little do they remember that's good. All they remember is when you denied them something or you were the red light to them. You think you're building up like... you're building up for old age that they're going to love you. I hate to be so cynical. I'm an older guy. I know the whole story. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I love my children. They love me, but they're their own people. What do you think? You walk around every minute thinking about what I did for them when they were five? Oh, yeah. I remember that time you made those cranberries, Dad. That was really great. Oh, yeah. I remember that. Sure. I remember when you wanted a Porsche and didn't buy it. Instead, you put money away for my college and you drove that broken Volvo. Yes, Dad. Sure, I remember you really were humiliated in that broken, stinking piece of garbage, four-on-the-floor, four-cylinder Volvo. You loved it, Dad, the way it smoked. You didn't want a new car. No, you loved denying yourself from me. They don't remember. What do they remember? They don't remember this. All they remember is like you were mean to them. You didn't let them go to the school dance dressed up as a goth or something, whatever. So live a little more for yourself. You'll be much happier in the end. They're not going to remember any. And those of you who think, by the way, I love seeing guys in their 30s running. That's my latest. I mean, I bicycle, but modestly. I've always known that the Asians had it down, which is the modest exercise, a moderate exercise. Moderate. Emphasis on moderate. Moderate. Modulate. The fanatics are going to drop dead anyway early from it. The body's not made for that, particularly at a certain age. You're killing yourself. I love they're running guys 50 over the bridge, gray hair, panting up a hill. They look like they're deprived in a prison camp somewhere in Siberia. Their bodies are breaking down from it. Most of them have had surgery on their knees or on their ankles, whatever, from killing themselves. How it ends usually is that you think you're going to live into old age and you'll be surrounded by loving children who you were kind to and they'll visit you and give you care and that you will not really suffer great pain because you're so good and God loves you. Instead, you will slowly stop spinning like just like a top runs out of energy. And you will just cease moving, and that will be it, and everyone will cry and remember you. That's not how it works. Here's how it works. You're going to get older, and at a certain point, probably younger than you would like to believe, everything will start breaking in your body. No matter how many vitamins you took, no matter what you did, sooner or later, time and gravity will catch up with you. Everything will break down. Then eventually, your family will get tired of your complaints and taking care of you, and it'll put you in assisted living, where you'll live out another 3 to 5 years. And you'll be pushed into a corner by an orderly because you'll be unable to work, or walk rather. And every day you'll stare at a curtain in the corner of the room, unable to move. And the third worlder who works in there will rob the few dollars your children give you for toiletries. That's how it ends. I'm just giving you a nice picture of the rose. You know, cynicism has its rewards. A dark sense of humor has its rewards. I'm enjoying myself. So if you're not, I can't help it. If you're in a miserable mood and all you want to talk about is the oligarchy and the bailout, please leave me alone already. Call someone else tomorrow about it. I already gave you my opinion for 2 weeks. I was way ahead of the curve on it. Must I do this now forever? Because you learned already what to say from all the radio shows. They're all calling me with what I said a week ago, what they heard this morning rehearsed. Get the government. Leave me alone already, for God's sakes. I got an eye that bothers me. That vitreous detachment, I could like the black things are floating in my right eye. I can hardly see out of it. Then that. I didn't get into the colonoscopy yet. I'm saving that up for another time. You're not ready for that. I'm recommending right now that you really don't fall for this propaganda. What? Because Katie Couric told you to get it. Every moron over 50 goes in every year and lets them shove a pipe into their guts. First of all, I read the data on it. Apparently, only 5% of the population has polyps to begin with. That's A. And of the 5%, only 7% of the polyps that appear turn tumorous. So what are they panicking you for? It's like saying, remove every pimple, you're liable to die of cancer. Well, what in the world? I mean, you want to balance this thing out, for God's sakes. You know, you want to be a rationalist about it, or you want to be panicked by a procedure that makes a fortune for an industry? They may as well be pumping chickens. So don't go for it just because they're telling you you'll die if you don't get it. I would never do it again. Never. Never. I haven't even gone into why. What? It's not your business why, but I can tell you some jokes about it right now. When I come back, I'll tell you about the thing. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Savage Nation. Here's a story out of Mogadishu, Somalia. Pirates say they celebrated Muslim holiday on a ship. And I realize this is so politically offensive that you should link the word pirates and Muslim holiday, but let me give you a little history. A, the Somali pirates are Muslim. B, they celebrated a Muslim holiday aboard the ship that they hijacked. C, I will remind you that the U.S. Navy was originally created because of Muslim pirates. That's exactly why the U.S. Navy was created, because Muslim pirates were raiding and sacking commercial shipping in the area. So the U.S. had to send out a warship to protect commercial merchant ships to sink, in other words, the pirate ships. And the pirates were all Muslims in that area at that time. So we're going back, in other words, to the times that the difference today is we have a U.S. Navy and they sit with binoculars. And instead of going aboard and killing everybody with cutlasses and teaching them a lesson, They have the petty officer there with a pair of glasses watching the ship and overflying. They're zooming over with helicopters that could wipe the ship. Over and over again, they do nothing. That's the difference. In the 18th century, they just would have gone aboard with cutlasses and killed everybody. It's unbelievable to me. I don't know what we have a military for. They sit there. They sit there. I watch military history at night. Weapons around the corner. There's the battlefield superiority. But if you don't have leadership that has the guts to use the weapon, what good is it? If the other guy has more guts than you do, it doesn't matter what weapons you have. He's going to beat you, as witness the USS Cole. With a rubber boat, they blew the boat almost in half because we had Bill Clinton as commander-in-chief. God help us all. So the Navy's sitting there with binoculars. They're watching him, the hijacking of the MV Faina, laden with 33 Soviet-made T-72 tanks. Piracy. Pirates say they celebrate a Muslim holiday on a ship. I wonder if that'll make it to your local newspaper. Kind of doubt it. John, San Francisco, KNEW. Welcome. What's on your mind?
Michael, I think you should be on the Supreme Court. I think your talents, your wisdom are what we need. You'd be a great president, but I think you'd be even better on the Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah. Tell John McCain that's what you think. I'm sure he'll listen to you. A guy who said we don't even need the Congress to spend the $1 trillion. Look, I'm a man who believes in justice, and there's a huge chasm between law and justice. You must understand that. I'd be a disaster for the Supreme Court because I'd actually seek justice for people who are pleading before me. I wouldn't write lengthy legal treatises on, although this doesn't give justice, the law says blah, blah, blah. I could never do that. I break it down to what the justice is, the scales of justice, and what people are going to a court for, not to hear what some stupid lawyer wrote.
I had listened to the Kool-Aid. I consider myself pretty savvy. I listened to Paulson, and I drank the Kool-Aid. I was panicking. I thought we needed this bailout. Then I listened to you, and I realized I was wrong. I was listening to these guys, and they're nothing but bailing out their cronies.
Well, that's what I've been saying for a while now, and it was risky for me to say it originally because nobody was there except me. And unfortunately for the Stooges, who have been shown to be nothing but mouthpieces for the oligarchy, it looks as though we could do quite well without a bailout because the fact is the market shut up today. It corrected itself, just as our financial system is designed to do.
And you were the only one that said it. I've been listening to everybody for weeks, and you're the only one that said it. Michael, I have one quick idea on how we could fix our economy, and I just want to get your thoughts on it. We pass a balanced budget amendment. After that, and only after that, we sell off parts of the United States, things like the Presidio that was worth $1 trillion, one-fifth of the land mass of the area of San Francisco. We could have sold that for $1 trillion rather than give it back to the idiots of San Francisco. Go through.
Why sell it at all when we're going to need it? You see, I have a different opinion. I think all the former military bases should never have been turned over to peacenik groups, because we're going to need military bases again in this country, the way things are going in the world. Where are we going to find the land from? The very same gangster criminals in Congress who forced the sale of these military bases and did it, by the way, through cronyism. You check out whether or not there were benefits garnered by some congressman or senator's friends who got pieces of the Presidio, for example, and then developed hotels, for example, underneath the Golden Gate Bridge. Find out if they're related to any of our esteemed senators from New York who are pretending to be from California. And you'll find out it's all corrupt and it's all graft-ridden. Well, what are we going to do when we need military bases? Why, the very same corrupt senators from Brooklyn who are living in San Francisco are going to tell us we need to buy land that they just happen to own to build barracks on, which will be built by their husbands who can put aside the shopping cart business. So, no, sir, I'm not in favor of that. I don't want to sell off anything. No more selling off. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. My dog is barking in the studio. It's disturbing me. But since it's almost over, I'm going to go see what's bothering him outside the glass menagerie here. Don't confuse law with justice. That's the first thing you got to learn. Never confuse law with justice. A lot of people say, wait a minute, that's not right. And then the judge says, of course it's not right. It's called the law, schmuck. And with the law, what do you think? They're honest because they're wearing a black robe? There isn't a dry cleaner in the country that can clean, for example, the black robes on a Ninth Circuit Court of Schlemiels. There isn't a dry cleaner that could clean them. They have to be thrown out every night, I understand. They bring them new robes every morning. They're so fetid.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome, 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 all you lapsed Catholics and synagogue jesters. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I noticed that voting for president begins in pivotal Ohio. The Demon Cats sued to make sure that illegal aliens, bums, prisoners, felons, and those not entitled to vote could be signed up and vote. And so today they're voting in Ohio. I really love that people died for the right to vote in America, the way it is treated with such ginger love by the Democrats. So they sued to make sure that an idiot that they dug up out of the gutter, who may not even be a citizen, by the way, can be dragged into a voting booth, sign up on the spot. Oh, don't show me any residency. Every time I vote, I try to show the little old ladies in tennis sneakers my driver's license. No, we don't want to see that. I say, why don't you want to see it? What do you mean you don't want to see it, idiot? What do you mean you don't want to see it? What, the bus outside playing mariachi music is what you want to see? DMV, Department of Mexican Voters. What do you mean you don't want to see it? That's the essence of my whole being as an American, is my vote. It's all I've got left. So now in Ohio, they're dragging up illegal aliens, bums, signing them up on the spot, not asking their residency. You hear this? That's how desperate they are to make sure that this sham candidate, Obama, wins. What a choice we have. Yeah, this is a real Hobson's choice between him and the war hero there. The war hero stooge who gets up today like Mel Brooks and says that with $1 trillion in the treasury, he can spend it without Congress. You hear? Just when you start to believe in the guy. Okay, I'll go. Every time you start to believe in this McCain, you know, again, the rockets go off again on the deck. The Ohio GOP asked the 6 U.S. Jerkit Court of Schlemiel's in Cincinnati either to stop same-day voting or require election officials to separate those bailouts so the registrations can be verified. But Brunner already has instructed election officials to segregate those ballots. Blah, blah, blah. A 3-judge panel of corrupt federal appeals court dirts, dirtbags, and black robes denied the request later in the day. I love it. 3-judge panel. You think, oh, steam, he's a judge, you're a black robe. What he is a corrupt lawyer bum who's worse than the lawyer who does your work for you. He's not even an honest lawyer. He's become a politician to become a judge. How do you think you become a judge? It's a lawyer who has greed and ambition, who is a politician, who plays the game. It has nothing to do with justice. There's no relationship between justice and the law. You understand that? Just as there's no relationship between justice and the law, there's not a necessary relationship between a judge and honesty, as we can well understand. What do you mean a three-judge panel denied the request? So now you got illegal aliens voting in Ohio to make sure that Obama, the magnificent, is elected. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. Puppets of the oligarchy, bah. Bah humbug. I wish it was Christmas and the election was over already so I could just go shopping. I don't actually shop for the holidays. I can't stand crowds. People do it forever. And like lemmings, they say that the holidays, right after Thanksgiving, like lemmings, you can't go on the road. There they are. It's a tradition to be an idiot and go spend everything. I wonder how it's going to be this year. I'm supposed to worry about the GI. Like I'm supposed to lay awake like it's a relative that's dying, the economy. Ooh, how is it today? You put a thermometer in the economy's mouth. How does it feel? How's it going to be? Is it got Alzheimer's? What disease does it have? I was never like a consumer. Today I shopped in Macy's. I almost got into a fist fight. Some old cracker bum tried to push me out of the way. because I was shorter than him. He figured he could just, hey, I was here first. The guy's ringing me up and put it in the bag. Get out of the way. Are you crazy? Boy, these people are on drugs or something. I called him a cracker right to his face. I said, get out of my way, cracker. You're going to wind up with something really unhappy in your mouth. Wow, what these people do. What do you mean, these people? Just people are rude here in Marin County, California. Evil, mean Obamaites. They're just mean old white people. I've never seen anything like it. Miserable, mean old white people. Just miserable, mean old white people getting away with murder every day of their life. They think they can push people around because that they're better than you are. Well, anyway, that's what happened. I shopped today because it was a sale. I bought a shirt for like $19. I don't know how they make a shirt for $19. It's a nice-looking shirt. I go to the sale rack. I can't help it. I grew up poor, so I always bought on sale. My family doesn't like when I do it. They want me to buy good, like, designer or have it made somewhere in Hollywood. Then I can't wear it. If I get a Hollywood-made shirt for $300, I'll never wear it. It hangs forever in the closet. Oh, that's the one I had made. Don't wear that. Save it for a good day. What good day? I have shirts from 20 years ago I never wore in my closet. They're good shirts. They're in the back. I wear the same greased. I wear shirts. You send them to the cleaner. Who can see the stain if it's a check green shirt? I don't like it. It's too uncomfortable. You could spill gravy on it. And I do, no matter what I eat, no matter how I try. I could put it. Ask my friends in the North Beach restaurant, Lorenzo. I was in there a few weeks ago. I ate some. He gave me a napkin, put it on my neck. I do the Godfather napkin thing. Bingo, it got around the napkin and hit the side of the shirt. And this was an expensive shirt that I've been saving for years. It must have cost me $39 on a special. It's fun to have grown up poor because it doesn't matter if there's a depression, I'm ready for it. I've been ready for a depression since I was born. I'm a depression-era man. In other words, I'm not from it. I'm ready for it. I could live like that. Get an old Volkswagen again, tie-dye, a headband, smoke dope again. Suddenly start screaming. Okay, I'll be right back.
Savage.
For years, I've been warning you that President Bush was a fiscal socialist. I said it over a year ago. One big boondoggle after another. Now with the bailouts and takeovers on the financial front, this government isn't even trying to hide it. Yet the mainstream media refuses to call it what it is. Cliff Kincaid with Accuracy in Media agrees with me. He joins us today on the Savage Nation to talk about his views on what's going on. Cliff, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's good to be back on the show with you.
In a recent article, you said socialism is coming to America. Well, we agree to a certain extent. I say it's already here. What are you seeing?
The media are trying their best to confuse us about what's going on. They call this a rescue. They call this a bailout. I even heard a White House official refer to the $700 billion plan as economic recovery. Well, let's be clear. This is socialism. This is the nationalization of the financial sector of the United States. You know, I had been thinking that we wouldn't get full-blown socialism until Barack Obama was elected president, considering, of course, his extensive socialistic and Marxist background. But no, we're getting socialism under the Republican presidency of George W. Bush. I guess this is going to be his legacy, to turn over a major part of the economy to Henry Paulson and his successor. I mean, I don't even know why we got a president anymore. I don't know why we need a Congress. Why don't we just turn over everything to Paulson, who, of course, became known as the Armand Hammer of China, a reference to the businessman who built up the power of the old Soviet Union. Paulson, a big friend of communist China, seems to be running everything. He wants all the power, and it looks like the Congress is going to give him most of what he wants, virtual dictatorial power. So why don't the president and the members of Congress just resign, and maybe we could save a little money there on their salaries?
Is the free market dead? Is Reagan's free marketeer concept over?
We're seeing the death of America. You know, I've been a student of international communism, and I went back and read a notorious book from back in 1932 called Toward a Soviet America, written by then the Communist Party chairman William Z. Foster. And he said in this book, he talks about how America will become socialist. And among other things, he says, in finance, it will mean the nationalization of the banking system and its concentration around a central state bank. Well, that is exactly the plan that's being put into practice by Henry Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, and the Federal Reserve Board Chairman, Ben Bernanke, and that's our central bank, as people can call it. Now, look, I'm not saying we're becoming a Soviet America or anything resembling the Soviet system, but it is socialism. And we, thank goodness we've got some members of the Senate, like Senator Jim Bunning of Kentucky and Senator Jim DeMint of South Carolina, who are saying so. They're saying, let's don't mislead the American people. This is socialism. This is, it's not a bailout. It's not a rescue. It's not an economic recovery. This is socialism. We are becoming a socialist system. And I think the American people understand that, even though the media are doing their best to mislead and confuse them. That's why we see millions of people across the country saying no. They're saying no to trying to fix this crisis by just going further into debt and spending more taxpayer dollars and getting the government even more involved in the national economy. I mean, why not try something different, something new, like going back to the Constitution, like going back to the concept of sound money, like having some money that's backed up by something legitimate and real, and not just based on whatever the Federal Reserve can produce through a printing press.
You mentioned a few senators speaking out against this monster, but it seems like a majority of them are pushing for it. There's almost a feeling of helplessness amongst the people.
Well, it is. But look, that's why we have elections. And both of these characters, though, McCain and Obama, seem to be only interested in spending more and more and more of our money, supposedly to prop up these institutions for a while. I mean, it may be a temporary fix. It may postpone the inevitable till past the elections. But look at what these characters are doing. Before they came back to Washington to work on this socialistic scheme, they were both planning to speak to the Clinton Global Initiative to talk about how they want to spend even more of our tax dollars on the rest of the world. Both of these, McCain and Obama, have been in contact with the overpaid rock star in sunglasses, Bono. Just the other day in New York, McCain and Sarah Palin, his running mate, who they're trying to transform into a virtual clone of McCain, had a phone conversation with Bono. What's his agenda? His agenda is to get more U.S. taxpayer dollars spent on the rest of the world. He's pushing something called the Jubilee Act to cancel the debts of the other countries, not our own. No, no, we're going to cancel theirs. And then he wants to spend more money to fight global poverty. And there, Barack Obama actually trumps McCain because Obama is the main sponsor of something called the Global Poverty Act, which would spend $845 billion over 13 years on the rest of the world. That's our money. That's our money. So, you know, as bad as the $700 billion seems, these candidates want to spend even more. They want to spend even more of our money on the rest of the world. That's why they're up there rubbing elbows with the rock star Bono, who, of course, is supported by the billionaire financial speculator and convicted insider trader George Soros. Both candidates are in on this fix, in on this globalistic nonsense, and they're trying to pull a fast one on the American people. You're right. The major media are in the tank for this this socialistic scheme, but I think the American people understand what's going on, and they've got to make these characters pay for what they're doing to us. They're destroying our country. They're destroying the very foundations of our capitalistic free enterprise system. And once they get these new powers in place, you and I know that we're never going to get freedom back again.
Well, government bailouts are really nothing new. Nixon did it, Carter did it, even Reagan did them. So what's so different this time?
Well, the difference now is the size and magnitude and the price tag. Yeah, there's been bailouts in the past. A company here, a company there, a few billion here, a few billion there, and that's all bad. And that shouldn't have been done. But in this case, they're socializing an entire sector of the American economy. I mean, what's going to be left? I guess if Obama wins, he's going to socialize the healthcare system, maybe on a step-by-step basis. And eventually, we're going to be paying, what, three-quarters of our income to government at all levels. Is that what we want in this country? How will we ever get our freedom back under those circumstances? Well, time is running out. We've got some time left to tell these people in Washington, as people have said, enough is enough. Yeah, enough is enough of using our tax dollars to bail out private special interests. Let's get back to what our Constitution envisioned, sound money backed by something real. You know, where in the Constitution was there ever a justification for setting up these mortgage companies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, in the first place? Where does the idea come from for government-sponsored mortgage companies? Now they're being completely controlled outright by the federal government. But where was the constitutional justification to ever set them up in the first place? Where's the constitutional justification for a Federal Reserve, a group of people operating almost unaccountable, who simply can print money at whim, at will, and all of this going further into debt, spending more of our tax dollars? It's going to make all that we have left even worse. It's going to decrease the value of the money in circulation. It's going to increase government control over our lives. And there's no guarantee, as even Senator Shelby said, the ranking Republican on the Banking Committee, that it's even going to work. I mean, how can it work? How can you solve this problem of too much government and too much debt by going into further debt and increasing the size of government?
Well, it's the standard government answer. Just throw money at it.
And fortunately, we've got people like Senator Bunning who are calling it what it is, financial socialism. And Senator DeMint, and there's others who are going to be against this bailout, a so-called bailout. That's the euphemism. They're also calling it, as I say, a rescue. No. They're rescuing the special interests, and the American people are being thrown overboard.
Cliff Kincaid, thanks for being with us again on the Savage Nation.
Thanks a million for having me on.
Savage.
After 9/11, the importance of closing the borders struck home. Everybody wants it. And despite the appearance of unity after 9/11, the Bush administration was racked by internal divisions over how to balance security and openness. Now, although some changes were made to try to keep terrorists out, huge holes remain in our security on the Mexican border. With us today is Edward Alden, former Financial Times Washington Bureau writer. He's here to talk about this, the border issue, and his new book, The Closing of the American Border. Edward Alden, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today. Enjoy your show.
Well, what made you write this book?
It came mostly out of work I did as a reporter. I was, for a number of years, a reporter for the Financial Times in the Washington Bureau. And I was writing about trade and economic stuff primarily. I mean, the Financial Times is an economic newspaper. It writes about the American economy and the global economy. And then 9/11 hit, and we all kind of scrambled to figure out, well, this is obviously a big new story, not the kind of story we have normally covered. What are some of the angles that we can write about at the newspaper? And so what I began to notice at the paper was that a lot of the institutions we write about, particularly big companies, suddenly found, sort of 2002, 2003, that it was getting very hard for them to get people into the country, either foreigners they wanted to hire or potential clients for products that U.S. companies wanted to export. And I began to talk to them and discovered that they were running into huge problems on the visa front, that, they'd have some some Chinese buyer for a product, and it would take 6 months to get him a visa, or else the visa would be turned down entirely. You had a bunch of these big trade shows where, you know, U.S. machine tool companies and others were trying to sell their goods to foreign buyers. None of the potential buyers could get visas to come into the United States. So I began to try to figure out, well, what was it that happened after 9/11 where everybody agreed we were supposed to be securing the border against a potential next wave of terrorists, and instead there were suddenly all these people that we obviously wanted to come to the country in some kind of timely fashion who couldn't get in. So that was where I started the research for the book.
Well, what's the biggest failure of the immigration overhaul?
The biggest failure is that we still have no ability to make intelligent distinctions between who we want in the country and who we don't want in the country. I mean, I think there is a kind of rational middle ground here that everybody could agree on, which is, you know, there are a lot of people that we want to come into the country, people who are going to attend our universities, who are going to work for American companies, who are going to contribute to American society, and there are people we want to keep out. We particularly want to keep out terrorists. We want to keep out drug smugglers, and to the extent that we possibly can, we'd like to keep out illegal immigrants. The problem is that our system is very, very poor at making those kinds of distinctions. And so you end up kind of going to extremes. You know, before 9/11, there just were not effective systems in place to keep out even known terrorists. There were enormous mistakes made prior to 9/11 in letting into this country individuals who were known by the Central Intelligence Agency to have connections with al-Qaeda. It was an appalling failure. And then what I saw happen after 9/11 was, you know, in an effort to prevent that mistake, we overreacted in the other direction, and suddenly we started to make it impossible for people that everybody who looked at it could agree, yeah, this is somebody we want in the country. There's one story I tell. There was a young doctor from Pakistan. A lot of Pakistani doctors come over here to do their training because the advanced training is not very good in their country. A lot of them end up staying here and working in American hospitals because we have a doctor shortage. This guy was the top of the heap. He was a pediatric cardiothoracic surgeon, which is a fancy way of saying he operated on babies' hearts. He had a job offer to attend UCLA. It goes back to Pakistan to renew his visa. He ended up spending almost a year there while the FBI decided whether they wanted to let him back in the country. I mean, he'd been here for a decade. Now, he was going to be hired by one of the best hospitals in the country. They had a desperate shortage of people with this kind of skill, and he sat there waiting in Pakistan for a year whether we decided to let him back in. And, you know, the loser there was American kids who didn't have a talented surgeon to operate on their hearts. So to my mind, the biggest failure has been our failure to make and enforce the distinctions between the people we want and need in this country and those we'd like to keep out.
Has there been any success with these changes?
Yeah, I do think there have been some considerable successes. I think there are many ways in which our border system is more effective than it was prior to 9/11. I'll take one example, which is the terrorist watch list. And there are, you know, there are real problems with the terrorist watch list. There are people whose names resemble the name of somebody who's on the terrorist watch list, and they get pulled aside in the airports and they get hassled. And there are problems with that, though they're gradually scrubbing these lists. But let's compare it to the situation before 9/11. Before 9/11, you had a dozen agencies in the U.S. government who all kept their own list of bad guys that we wanted to keep out of the country. And they rarely talked to each other. The most important one was the list kept by the State Department, because, you know, if you're flying here from any country in the world where you need a visa, and most of the ones that we're worried about, you need a visa to come to the United States, you have to get approval from the State Department. State Department had this list, had it in the 90s, of people, you know, known bad guys, known terrorists that we want to keep out. Only the FBI and the CIA and other intelligence agencies were terrible at sharing that information. They wouldn't tell the State Department what they knew. And at least two of the 9/11 hijackers, that was why they got into this country. They were known as al-Qaeda operatives by the CIA. CIA never told the State Department. That has improved a lot since 9/11. It took a while. There were a lot of growing pains. But we now have a single consolidated terrorist watch list that's available to everybody who matters, the consular officer issuing a visa overseas, the Customs and Border Protection guys at the airport. In fact, in considerable measure, it's even available to local police. So if you pull somebody over, you can run a check to see if that individual comes up as a hit on the terrorist watch list. So we've got a much more comprehensive and effective system than we had before 9/11 in that regard. And I think we're safer because of it.
Yeah, but is Homeland Security really equipped to handle the border?
No, I don't really, though I can't tell you exactly what I think the best structure would be. I mean, one of the things that I write about in the book that a lot of people don't know is that this big behemoth of a Department of Homeland Security was not originally what anybody inside the administration envisioned. If you go back to 2001, right after the attacks, when Tom Ridge was in the White House, this is before he became the secretary, what he wanted to see was simply a merging of the different border agencies. You know, prior to 9/11, you had the Immigration and Naturalization Service that had its own people, did its own thing. You had the Customs Service, which had its own people, did its own thing. You had the Coast Guard, which was responsible for the coastline. These were all organizations with essentially the same responsibility, which was to try and monitor and secure the country's borders. And they were often working at cross purposes. And Ridge wanted to just consolidate those organizations, maybe even keep it in an existing cabinet department. And there were a lot of experts who agreed, said, look, you know, this makes a lot of sense. This is something that's long overdue. It got killed within the cabinet. Every cabinet agency that was scared of losing some piece fought against it. You know, Treasury didn't want to lose Customs, and Transportation didn't want to lose the Coast Guard. So that got killed. And then what we ultimately ended up with was this much bigger, less manageable entity that's not only supposed to do borders, it's supposed to, you know, fight hurricanes and deal with all sorts of natural disasters. And it's got a whole, you know, to deal with commercial infrastructure, protecting those, got a whole massive array of responsibilities that I think makes it very difficult to focus intelligently on border and immigration issues. And I would rather have seen that kind of reorganization. But, you know, as I say, it's water under the bridge. I think we have what we have, and I don't see a new administration undoing the Department of Homeland Security.
Do you see anything in the two candidates that says it's going to get better?
Well, I don't see a lot of prospects for getting better, because I think we have to see a situation in which tougher enforcement is matched by intelligent policy. And we don't have that at the moment. I mean, where the McCain campaign is that, you know, we are going to demonstrate to the people that we have secured the border before we do anything else on the immigration reform front. And you know, one of the things that really surprised me in the course of my research, I did a lot of interviews with officials in the Department of Homeland Security and elsewhere. And these are smart people. They're hardworking people. They're good people. But they have a belief that if only we can deploy enough firepower and we can deploy enough sophisticated technology and we can put enough men on the border, that we are going to halt illegal immigration. One of them, you know, said something to me which I found amazing. He said, you know, we're trying to do what the Chinese tried to do with the Great Wall. The Great Wall didn't work, but we're going to make it work. Well, there was a reason the Great Wall didn't work. It's extremely hard to build barriers that are high enough and strong enough and fortified enough to keep out everything and everybody that you don't want inside the country. So there has to be some twinning of security measures with intelligent immigration policy. Until you can bring the numbers more in line with the demand, you're going to be fighting a losing battle. But you know, the public mood just isn't there now, I think, for that kind of immigration reform. I think both the candidates have recognized that. I don't see it being the top of either of their agendas in a new administration. And so I think we'll continue to go down the road we're going down, which is ultimately going to be unsuccessful.
Edward Alden, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks very much, Michael. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
Savage.
I will continue to work with congressional leaders to find a way forward to pass a comprehensive plan to stabilize our financial system and protect the American people by limiting the prospects of further deterioration in our economy. We've got much work to do, and this is much too important to simply let fail.
As much as we might wish the situation were different, our country is not facing a choice between government action and the smooth functioning of the free market.
Let's pause right here. It's me. I'm back again. You know, I'm amazed at the number of phony Republicans who say things like, I am for free markets and capitalism, but these are special times. You know, it's really easy to stick to your principles in easy times. Anyone can do that. But the real mark of a politician's character is whether they stick to them in the tough times, too. And I have stuck to my principles throughout this false crisis. I wish I could say the same thing for all of our politicians. Luckily, we have some who did as well. They stood up to the oligarchs. They did so for self-interest, but that's okay. They're supposed to. They know they're under the microscope, and they're going up for re-election November 4th. And they can't afford to say they're fiscal conservatives one day and vote for Karl Marx the next day. There is a great article on this from the Financial Times, Financial Post, which I'm putting up on michaelsavage.com as we speak. It is entitled Bailout Marx, Karl Marx's Comeback by Martin Mass. And he says, Marx's proposal number 5 seems to be the leading motivation for those backing the Wall Street bailout. And I'm going to read it to you right now in the Savage Nation. Martin Mass writes, in his Communist Manifesto published in 1848, Karl Marx proposed 10 measures to be implemented after the proletariat takes power, with the aim of centralizing all instruments of production in the hands of the state. Proposal number 5 was to bring about, quote, the centralization of credit in the banks of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly, close quote. If he would arise from the dead today, Marx might be delighted to discover that most economists and financial commentators, including many who claim to favor the free market, agree with him. Indeed, analysts at the Heritage and Cato Institute and commentators in the Wall Street Journal and on this very page have made declarations in favor of the massive injection of liquidities engineered by central banks in recent months. The government takeover of giant financial institutions, as well as the still-stalled U.S. $700 billion bailout package. Some of the same voices were calling for similar interventions following the burst of the dot-com bubble in 01. Whatever happened to the modern followers of my free market opponents, Marx would likely wonder. Did you understand what I just said to you? Do you have any idea that I've been right on this, right on the money all along, and that your fraudulent Republican phonies who've been screaming for a Marxist-like takeover of the economy are exactly what I've told you they are? They're oligarchs and they're frauds. Marx would wonder whatever happened to the modern followers of my free market opponents. Where are they? Well, they certainly can't be found in the form of some of these columnists who've disguised themselves as conservatives, who are screaming now, I hate populism of any kind, says the agent's son. I hate populism of any kind, says the female agent's son who posed as a conservative, who all along was a Marxist. All along, most of these neoconservatives are fundamentally still Marxists in their core. They've never changed. You understand what I just said to you? What is wrong with the bailout? Well, let's start with the fact that taxes are going to be raised to finance this package. Taxes are going to be raised by Obama or by McCain. It makes no difference. McCain will tax and borrow. Obama will tax and tax, but it's an insignificant difference. But the fact is that this package may keep Goldman Sachs alive, but this package will siphon off capital, kill jobs, and make businesses less productive elsewhere. Do you understand what I just said to you? Do you understand what I just said to you? Do you have any idea what this is? The bailout plan is a very bad idea on many levels. The government is proposing to intervene at your expense, the taxpayers' expense. And they want to intervene in a sector of the economy
that has had a huge run up in recent years. In fact, fully one-third of all U.S. corporate profits in 06 were from the financial services sector. So now that the market went down, we're supposed to reward these thieves? These yuppie thieves from Harvard are supposed to be rewarded by the taxpayer? I mean, we heard that Marxism eats its children. But now we're finding out that capitalism eats its children, too. This is not a capitalist idea, this bailout. This is a Marxist idea. Bailout is nothing but Marxism. The market, if it was allowed to run its course, would do what it did today. The market would rise. Some companies would fall. And how many times have I told you that this bailout stinks of favoritism? And it stinks because Paulson came from Goldman Sachs, which I've been alerting you to for 2 months now. Before most of you even heard of Goldman Sachs, I was sending out the warning signs. Because I, Michael Savage, am the Linkaeus of the radio business. Look up Linkaeus, the pilot seer of the Argonauts. I have the highest mast and the best binoculars. I saw this coming, and I warned you about the Treasury secretaries going back three administrations. I'm the only one who did. So I'm not looking for any kudos. I don't need your reward. I mean, I don't need you to say thanks. Mike, I hope you do. I hope you recognize that it's worth your listening time. Basically, that's what it comes down to. And I want to remind you, I'm not like the others in the business. I'm older than them. I could afford to walk away from this. I could afford to retire. I could afford to live out the rest of my years, whatever they may be, without working anymore. I could have done this for 10 years. I could have walked away. I'm not hungry and greedy like them selling you floor mats, peddling you a false bill of goods, wrapping themselves in the flag and telling you they're conservatives, and then backing the bailout, backing the Dubai ports deal. I'm doing this because I enjoy it. Why do I enjoy it? Because it's meaningful and it's important. That's why I enjoy it. Einstein said in his last days as he continued to write his formulas, he said, a life without purpose is unlivable. Can't live it. I can't play golf and tennis and go out on my boat and make that my life. It's impossible for me. I don't know how men do it. I never understood it. They're good men, but I don't know what they do. I don't know how they deal with it. They need meaning in their life. Perhaps they devote themselves to community organizations or charities, and that gives them the purpose that they need to live. But to just guzzle booze with your friends and play golf, never could I do that. I don't understand it. And that's why I come before you and tell you the truth. Because at the end of the day, that's all that matters. I have to answer to a higher authority than some. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return. It's the Savage Nation. Never forget it.
Savage.